Hello, everyone. All our listeners here and around the world, you're listening to yet another edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining you as always is Chris Logie and Teresa Salmon. Say hi to the good folks.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. So this episode is going to be for May 13th, 2023. Some of you probably remember that Tucker Carlson got his ass fired from Fox News. Well, now he's trying another venture, and he's basically sort of openly challenging Fox to try and sue. Because those you don't know, he's still in contract, so technically he can't do anything outside of the Fox brand. We'll be talking about that and a little bit more, because that whole story is just crazy. Also, CNN apparently thought it was a good idea to give Donald Trump a town hall. Like, I don't know why, but they did that. We also had another fucking mass shooting happen, and this time it was by a Nazi. And God, it was crazy all week. People were trying, there were people actively trying to prove that I wasn't a Nazi. Like, even though the dude had like tattoos, he had a swastika, he had the SS rune bolts on his shoulder, you know, he had like all the Hitler stuff in his web history and everything. It's like, no, it can't be, he can't be a Nazi. Yeah. It's just,
yeah. Even Elon.
Yeah.
He was like, why wasn't he on Twitter? Why was he on a Russian social media?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, are you jealous that the guy that killed a bunch of people isn't on your service?
Yeah. Then, of course, there was this one dipshit who got really drunk and ran to a crowd of migrants in Brownsville, Texas. I'll be talking about that also. And the ongoing saga of the very public murder of Jordan Neely continues. The guy who killed him surrendered himself to the police. We'll be talking about that. And, of course, we've also got some other stuff to talk about. We got a bunch of entertainment news, including a crap ton of trailers. And the story about Disney looking to merge Disney Plus and Hulu. And Warner Brothers formally announcing a sequel to a movie that I genuinely love, but I did not think would ever come back again. We'll tell you all about it. But first, before we do any of that stuff, let's talk about all the things, as is tradition, things we've been doing leading up to this week. Well, doing this week leading up to today. And as always, Chris, we'll start with you. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Sweating. It's been very hot.
Mm-hmm.
Around here, hitting near 80 a few times this week.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been unpleasant, especially for early May.
Mm-hmm.
For that, but yeah, I've been watching some stuff. I watched through The Muppets Mayhem, mm-hmm. which is the new Disney Plus series featuring Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem,
mm-hmm.
as they just basically do a big like fish allegory,
mm-hmm.
of them being this band that's been on tour for a long time. They call their fans Mayheads.
Uh-huh.
And deals with this person that works for an album that helped them get their first like bit of funding from a label,
mm-hmm.
Back in the day. But part of that was to do an album, which they never did. Mm-hmm. And so this series is about them sort of making their first album,
mm.
and all the trials and tribulations with all that that goes on. And they go definitely show you more of the entire band than you ever really saw.
Mm.
Throughout most of the stuff they did.
Yeah.
You learn like, oh, there's a guy that talks like a mush mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Just mumbles a lot so that most people don't understand anything they say.
Mm.
You know, there's the one guy who has no memory, so that's why they gave him a camera, so he can take pictures of stuff and remember things and that kind of stuff. Have a lot of cameos, some mm-hmm. very weird. Like Billy Corgan.
Yeah.
Who, if you don't know, he is a very libertarian conspiracy theorist.
Uh-huh.
But, like, the most public thing he's done is own TNA, Impact.
Mm-hmm.
So he's, like, shows up to this party. He's like, we're going to move stuff to set up a wrestling ring in here.
Mm-hmm.
And disappears for good after that. And there's, like, Charlemagne the God, who also has his own weird issues.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a few others like that, but for the most part, Janice has like a weird relationship at one point, I guess, with Gwyneth Paltrow, though she never shows up.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, oh, we're doing this goop thing. Just like her. And it's like, oh, God, really? So, yeah, there's a couple things there. It's like, this isn't great, but luckily it's not like a core narrative. But Janice does at one point start a cult, I guess. So that's a whole weird thing. But, yeah, it's a good show.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's not going to be like a second season kind of thing, anything kind of recurring. But they do a good job with a lot of it. And it took me to looking it up to realize the guy that plays Moog is Taj Maori,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, the Maori sisters, their little brother.
Mm-hmm.
So he's all grown up in that show. As like one of the main mayheads that has followed them around
mm-hmm.
4 years, that kind of thing. So, yeah, fun little show for that. I started watching some of Star Wars Visions season 2. I think I finished 3 of the episodes.
Mm.
Still good.
Mm.
A lot of good stuff there. But going away from the anime stylings of the first season. To you know, teams from all over the world.
Yeah.
So there's some fun stuff there. I think I got to my first of the like stop motion episodes. So that's fun. And then I just went and finished Phineas and Ferb, the TV show part of it, which has an interesting ending where you know they reach the end of the summer. And then they just go into this bit of like the last two episodes, I think, are featuring Alka, the animal, you know, secret spy agency, as like the what they do for the last two episodes. Mm-hmm. And then one of the previous last episodes is the Star Wars thing that they do, which has one bit of it that maybe doesn't hold up if you know more about Star Wars than what kids would know at that point. Which has, they don't play any of the main characters like Luke or Han or Chewie or any of that.
Yeah.
They play their own characters that just happen to look like them. Mm. But, you know, those characters also exist here and they kind of play it in the same timeline as like the original movie.
Mm-hmm.
Of sorts. So it's like you see Doofenshmirtz doing stuff with the... under the trash compactor on the Death Star and seemingly like running into the big weird alien monster that pulls Luke under the water
mm-hmm.
for a bit and tells him to like put him back up kind of thing. Some stuff like that. But they give one big musical number to Candace, who is like a stormtrooper that is about how she's the best stormtrooper.
Mm.
And it's like, okay, she's singing about how good of a Nazi she is.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, this hits differently, you know, 15 mm-hmm. years later on that stuff. So, but yeah, she doesn't stay bad through the whole thing, but she's definitely like, I'm a great Nazi, great stormtrooper, mm-hmm. that kind of thing throughout that song. So that's a weird bit, but yeah, still fun mm-hmm. show. They do one like flash forward episode, like 10 years in the future, as a couple of people are about to head to college kind of thing. And Isabella and Phineas are kind of realizing their relationship before they go off to college for a bit. So that's a fun bit. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, some neat episodes there. Looking forward to when that eventually comes back. Mm-hmm. As they are working on that. And yeah, in case anybody doesn't know, the Animation Guild is not part of the Writers Guild.
Yeah.
And they get paid worse, so
mm-hmm.
that's not... You don't need to harass anybody working on animated shows.
No.
About being scabs or anything. They're taking what they can get, especially with the volatility of the animation industry right now. But yeah, then I saw the trailer for the Meg 2, The Trench. And I was like, I never saw the original and looked up what it was on, and it's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to watch that. Cause I had not seen it, and the trailer has a very specific vibe to it that I was like, okay, this is very much like, I guess like, was it Deep Blue Sea is the one where they genetically engineer sharks to make them smarter?
Yeah.
It has a Samuel Jackson in it, I think.
Yeah.
Because very much is kind of that, not so much like a Jaws, but they are dealing with this whole weird ecosystem that they find at the bottom of the ocean that is magically warm. But that's where the Megs have continued to live, along with other ancient species that people either didn't know about or didn't know still existed, kind of thing. But their exploration of the area like creates weird pockets of opportunity for the Megs to get out, at least two of them, which they don't know that two come out. They know the one. And then at a certain point, it makes a dramatic entrance to be like, oh, there's a bigger one somehow that we all completely miss, that kind of thing, which is fun. And it was weird seeing like a lot of the stuff I saw in the original trailers for that movie, like show up in the last like 30 minutes where they start getting out into actual public areas. That is it's a pretty fun, like, big shark monster movie thing. So, yeah, there you go for that. And that has Masioka in it as well. He plays a scientist that goes down in the initial dive and then sacrifices himself to save the others, kind of thing. So, yeah, there you go. Then I've been playing a bunch of games, or a few games here. Breath of the Wild, I played some more. Just as getting ready for Tears of the Kingdom come out. I did a bit of a stream with that, just kind of looking at some of the DLC stuff that I managed to get, and got a few other things there that is some fun stuff, like the Majora's Mask thing, the Korok Mask, and what's a couple other things. And then tried working on the Champion's Ballad DLC quest. That is pretty good, but challenging, because it gives you this weapon that can kill enemies in one hit that takes a bit to charge back up after like two hits you can get with it. So you can, and it also makes you a glass cannon, so you can't take one hit at all. So I was like trying it a couple times, not doing too well. And then the guide I saw was like, oh, you should just use your bow, not this weapon, because then you can stay at a distance and, you know, avoid getting hits more easily. And yep, that worked, at least for the first part of it. They make you go through four shrines and kill some enemies around where those shrines would be to get them to appear, that kind of thing. So it's a bit involved. I got through one set of enemies in one shrine in the time I had, so that's fun. But you know, I have Tears of the Kingdom. We'll talk about more of that tomorrow. But yeah, the other thing I've been playing, Rocket League, had to work on the big event, as I was having some trouble with one of the quests to unlock the car that then you use to finish up the last two quests, which required me to get a bunch of assists. And every mode I was trying just was not getting much of those out of people. But once I did get them eventually, but that was like in the last like 24 hours, it was getting close on that stuff. So, but that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Teresa?
Yes, Teresa.
I've been watching a decent amount of stuff this week. It's been like just really busy at work. So at night, I need something to sit and watch. I did the first episode of Muppets Mayhem, so yeah, I thought that's really fun so far. Chris, you can tell me if I'm wrong. So far, yeah, the story is a little, I don't know, a little schlocky and tropey, but really cute. It reminds me, honestly, of childhood, because that's kind of how Muppets were. So,
yeah, though it's weird that like all the people like grew up with the Mayhem are only like in their 20s or 30s.
Yeah.
Where it's like supposedly the band's been around since the 70s.
Well, they were, though. Yeah. I mean, they would, you know, they would play all the time on like the Muppet Show Tonight and stuff like that. And of course, they were featured in all the maybe all the movies. But yeah. Yeah, it is kind of weird. how you remember them does depend on like when you were born. Another thing that we've been watching, or well, we did finish it. It did take us 4 nights to finish this because it's a very, very long movie. It is a film adaptation of Hamlet done by Kenneth Branagh back in 1996. And it's just wow. It's just wow. Like most everything that Kenneth Branagh did whenever he was able to be the director. I've been rewatching the last season of Rick and Morty because I think we stopped about 2 episodes short. So we were watching it while it was airing. And then for whatever reason, I think there was a holiday or something, we never got back to it. So we're in the midst of that and had a little bit of fun with it. We've also been watching there. It's basically a 2 episode thing. If you've seen Ken Burns stuff, you kind of know how it goes. It's just a really, really long serial documentary, but this is on Benjamin Franklin, and it's not quite as long. So we have watched the first half of that, and we will be finishing the second half. And it's really interesting, and some of the things make me just so freaking angry that we don't have somebody promoting the good part of what Franklin did. Like anybody back in the day or even now, he's a complicated character with some flaws. Some things, you know, that just weren't very cool. We would have liked him to have done differently, but there were a lot of things that he did do, especially in the way of patents or lack thereof. I did not watch any of the CNN fiasco with Trump, but I've definitely heard of the fallout. And I've also heard a rumor, and I have not done my research to substantiate it, that there is a new person with either a great amount of shares or some sort of influence over CNN, or actually bought the company, that makes me predict, if what I've heard is right, in the next 3 years, I bet we'll see Tucker Carlson on CNN. So let's mark
he'll
it here.
Be back there. Because remember, that's where he used to be.
That is. But I think that he will be back there and possibly even more vile than he was up to 2 weeks ago. But as for things that I've been playing, I was going to finish Breath of the Wild, just like you're going through, Chris. But I found myself playing Animal Crossing New Horizons as soon as I turned on the Switch. So there we are. That's what I've been doing this week. And in personal stuff, today my kid got a driver's permit, so she should be able to take her driver's test within 9 months. There's like a mandatory 9-month learning period in our state, which I didn't know about. But yeah, here it is. And then after that, we went out for kind of a soggy day's outing and got some ramen, which was just really, really good. Although, of course, I've mentioned before, I'm not a really big ramen fan. So I had a rice bowl and the chashu pork little sticky bun sandwich thing. And that's pretty much it for my week. Brandon, what have you been up to?
Well, I played and I actually finished Deathloop. I actually managed to stop the loop for good. So, like, the basic thing with that game is, you know, again, it's an island. It's controlled by these guys called the Visionaries, who basically set up a system that exploits like a ripping the space-time continuum to sort of create a time loop on this island, so that they and their followers can basically have a hedonistic existence for eternity, basically. Where, you know, the laws of, you know, death don't apply, because every time you die, you just loop back and start over again. And then the guy you're playing, for whatever reason, finally decides that it's time to break the loop for good. And so basically, he figures out that in order to break the loop, you have to kill all of the Visionaries in one single 24-hour period. Because After that 24-hour period is up, the whole thing loops all over again, and you're back to where you started. The only difference is that, unlike everyone else on the island, you're the only person who remembers what happened during the previous loop. So you slowly build up all your information and your strength and everything. The only problem is there's actually one other person on the island named Juliana who also can do the same as you in that they can remember what happens in previous loops, and they're also trying to kill you at any time and prevent you from breaking the loop. And they literally can show up pretty much at any point when you're playing the game. Usually when, like, a visionary is on the field and, you know, you're actively out there trying to kill them. But the thing is, you know, it's, you know, a single 24-hour day only has, like, you know, four circles. Morning, noon, afternoon, and then evening. And then it loops around again. Whereas visionaries, you've got, like, I think it's, like, seven or eight of them total. So what ends up happening is you figure out a way where you can basically kill one of them while they're off screen, figure out a way to sort of group another two of them into a small area and get rid of them. And then third, you manipulate events so that they all are in the same area where a party is being thrown. And yeah, and then after you do that, you then have to go to this giant sort of like eye-shaped mechanism that's sort of in charge of controlling the loop and keeping it going, where you then have to kill Juliana and then yourself to finally break the loop for good. And yeah, it was a legitimately amazing game. It was amazing when I finally was able to like get everything in order, because the game is pretty challenging and very dynamic. But I managed to get it in such a way so that I could, you know, get all of them off in a single day. And it's amazing seeing like how Arcane was able to take what is essentially not a very big like area and turn it into and like, you know, make it dynamic enough so that you could basically go through so many of these areas again and again over again and it never gets boring. Like ever. So yeah. Let's see. I've also started replaying Indivisible because I had started that a little while ago and I decided to start it again. That's the game that was made by some of the guys behind Skullgirls. It's sort of a side scroller action platforming RPG game. Really fun. Has a lot of heavily inspired by, like, you know, the cultures of like in and around South Asia. So, you know, India, Tibet, parts of China, India, that whole part of the world. And the artwork is gorgeous, obviously. So is the character design. It's all good. And on top of that, I'm sort of waiting for my copy of Legend of Tears of the Kingdom to get here because you know, I ordered it online, and I try to get physical stuff when Nintendo is involved because I don't really trust their online stuff all that much.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's in the mail. It should be getting. Last I checked, it should be getting here Monday. So I'll be able to start playing it then. I know, of course, Dan Rev's already got it, but you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. And what else? Nothing much. Books. Oh, yeah, books. So I have been reading this amazing novel I've been reading. It's called Shang Yang All-Stars. By a guy by the name of Nanakwame Adjibrenya, who wrote originally he became famous because he published this amazing collection of short fiction called Friday Black. And his stuff is like, he writes fiction like a frustrated poet, basically. Every single line feels impactful and incendiary. And the stories he constructs are like, there's parts he sort of balances that line between like, you know, modern, postmodern type stuff and genre fiction. Like in Friday Black, there are some of those stories where it's like, you could so easily see it being published in like one of those, new wave science fiction magazines from like the 60s and 70s. And then there's others where you can totally see it being published in something like The New Yorker. And basically what he does is he takes a sort of, all of his stories sort of take place in a sort of vaguely alternate reality where he takes like one particular issue of justice and just of injustice and just cranks it up to 11. And with Chain Gang All-Stars, he basically came up with the idea of what if the private prison industrial complex in the United States came up with the idea that they could earn more money if they basically took their death row inmates and made them fight to the death in public gladiator matches. And that's basically what it is. Essentially, they managed to get a law passed called the Fair Choice Act, where death row inmates are given this decision to opt into something called the CAPE program, where they are given a sort of like, they're basically turned over into a sort of gladiator type system where they're put into these teams called chain gangs. And then each of them are called links because, you know, they're links in a chain. And then they are essentially fighting each other to the death, and they rank up, they get like better, you know, and as they go up in the ranks, they get better food, they get bigger, better weapons, until eventually they will get to the point that they can actually walk free. Now, the thing is, the way the program is set up, it's very difficult to actually do that. And in fact, when the book takes place, nobody has managed to do it. There have been a lot of people who've gotten really close, but the status quo is figured out that if they can keep these people fighting perennially, then they will never have to, you know, pay out for having them go free. And basically the story is about these two specific links. One of them is called Loretta Thurwar, who uses a large hammer, and another one named Hurricane Stax, who uses a large scythe. And they end up getting on the same team, and they become best friends and tag team partners, and yes, lovers as well. And like they talk about like all the matches and stuff, because basically this isn't like some webcam thing. No, this is like they have these gladiator matches in like packed arenas with like all the pomp and circumstance for like NASCAR pro wrestling. They got theme songs, they got costumes, corporate sponsorship, the whole works. But then the book will also like sort of zoom out, and you'll get to see like just the whole sort of pattern of how this system works. You hear the stories from like the soldier police, who are like the private prison police officers who, you know, help run this stuff, the people who watch the matches on TV. There's this anti-Kate protest group that goes from match to match protesting them. Every so often, Ajay Brania will like put in some like some footnotes and stuff to sort of give you some basic factoids about like how this all sort of links to the real world and also sort of expands on the book's universe and stuff. He'll occasionally drop some facts about, you know, how the prison complex in the United States works, all kinds of stuff. And damn, if it's not some good shit. I mean, it is brutal, and the book makes no bones about the fact that, yes, these are human beings who have done awful things who are being forced to murder each other in public for entertainment purposes. And, yeah, and it's like, it can get really uncomfortable in parts. There's this one part where Thurwar is being sort of led through a crowd of fans and onlookers by the soldier police, basically allowing all of these people to molest her as they're leading her to the prison bus. Yeah, it's they make no bones about the fact that basically the fans and the system basically very much sexualize these two women. It can be uncomfortable, but damn, it's good. It is some good shit. I'm expecting a boatload of awards for this book too. So that's about it for books. And mostly just Mother's Day stuff, because, you know, Mother's Day is tomorrow. You know, we're going to go over to my grandma's house. We're going to have ourselves a lunch and some other stuff, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, that's what I've been up to. So you guys want to add anything for on? All right. Well, then. With that out of the way, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Rins Rand Toyed. And this week, we're going to talk about a little thing that happened in Chicago a few years ago. And maybe you remember this happening, Teresa.
Okay.
It involves the previous of the previous mayor, Mr. Richard M. Daley, who, of course, was the son of another infamous Chicago mayor, Richard J. Daley. I'm sure you're familiar with these two gentlemen.
Oh, indeed, yes.
Yeah. Now, both of the Daleys have their, shall we say, controversies going along with them. And especially when it comes to Mr. Richard M. Daley, he was like one of the kings of privatization in Chicago and was, much like his father, had a lot of people who he was involved with accused of and convicted of corruption, but he managed to keep them at an arm's distance, so it rarely, if ever, came back to him. But that's not really what we're talking about today. No, we're going to be talking about the time that he did something so shockingly underhanded that even when he tried to use 9/11 as an excuse, nobody fucking bought it.
Okay, okay.
Don't say it out loud if you know what it is.
No, I was thinking that it was going to be a certain overnight debacle, but I don't.
Oh, it was an overnight thing, and it is what we're talking about.
Okay.
Are you ready for it? Okay, so.
Well, I'm ready for it because I'm still mad about it.
Okay, okay. So, Teresa. Teresa, in Chicago, there are two working airports, correct?
Currently, at least, there are two working airports in Chicago.
Don't say more. Just say what were two airports.
Yeah, we got O'Hare and Midway.
Okay, yes. Those are the two. If you're flying into Chicago, you either land at the O'Hare Airport or the Midway Airport. However, that didn't always used to be the case. Because believe it or not, Chicago actually had a third airport they built on Lake Michigan many a year ago. It was called the Meigs Field Airport. Am I pronouncing it right? Meigs Field? All right. Yeah,
it's Meigs Field. It's just Meigs, yeah.
Yeah. So Meigs Field, yeah, it was an airport. It wasn't a big airport. It was like a single airport with like a single runway, but it was for, you know, private planes coming and going. So if you were, if you were on a private Gulfstream or like a tiny plane, you know, one of those things, you might land at the Meigs. Also, if you were saying trying to fly in some fresh donor organs for like an emergency transplant or something, you would fly into the Meigs Airport, where they would quickly get them to the hospital or the, you know, meatpacking district. It's kind of a 50-50 there. But around 1994, Chicago announced plans that they were going to get rid of it and replace it with a park. Now, obviously, when it comes to getting rid of an airport, you've got a lot of roadblocks, you know, in the way that you got to deal with the law and basically anyone with an interest in the matter, and also the fact that it's a fucking airport they built on a lake. It's going to be kind of an issue getting rid of it.
Yeah.
So basically for about a decade, nothing happened until March 30th, 2003, when Mayor Richard M. Daley basically just sent in some bulldozers in the middle of the night to do the job for him. Now, they didn't actually raise the whole place. No, because that would be a big job, even for an airport with just a single runway. Instead, what they did is they went in the middle of the night and they bulldozed giant X's into the runway, as well as a couple of ditches and divots into it, just so that nobody could use it. And on top of that, you're probably thinking, wow, this sounds hella illegal and probably unethical. You would be right on both counts. Yep. In fact, he had no legal authorization to do any of this. He had no authorization of any kind. And he knew he had no legal authorization of any kind because while they were doing this, he had sent in a fire truck to shine a spotlight onto the webcam that was trained on the airport so nobody could see what was happening.
Yep.
Oh, and the worst part about all of it? The airport was still being used at the time. There was about a dozen or so planes on the runway and they had no way.
Yep.
Yeah. And so, as you can imagine, a lot of people were pissed at him, and especially the FAA, because they don't take kindly to that kind of shit. But also remember, this was during the Bush administration. So, you know, they find the city, obviously not Daley personally, though he probably should have been the one to pick up the tab. And they didn't really find them a whole lot either.
No. It was like $30,000 or something. It was something really, really small.
Yeah. And basically the FAA later on changed the rules so that they could find even more cash if anyone else tried the same thing. So yeah, if you see a picture of the remains of Migs Field, you'll definitely see these giant, crudely just crushed X's into the runway, basically several feet apart, so that it's like they're almost surgically made so that it makes the runway completely unusable. And now if you're wondering, what excuse did Mayor Daley give to justify his decision? Well, first of all, he said, well, I just saved everyone, you know, more years of pointless court battles. And I was like, still not a good excuse. And then he said, okay, well, how about this? 9/11. See, if we had left the Migs Field in place, the terrorists could use it and attack downtown.
They weren't going to.
Yeah, and here's the thing. Even back in 2003, like literally just 2 years after 9/11, no one fucking bought it.
No.
Nobody. Nobody in Chicago, nobody in the state of Illinois, nobody in America.
Yeah, now it's like some weird park. Although people do say that it is very beautiful because it's, you know, there's not much going on in that part of Northerly Island.
Yeah.
And there's a venue for concerts there.
Yeah.
And there's a visitor center, which I think is still being used as housing for migrants who have come in here and needed somewhere to stay.
Yeah.
But yeah, there was a lot of good reasons to keep it open. But basically, the gist of it that we all felt was he did it because he fucking could. Because there was hardly no teeth to the fine that he was going to be getting for it.
Yeah.
And he got what he fucking wanted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, and also, the last bit of little irony, you know what the terminal at Migs Field had been dedicated to?
What?
His dad, Richard J. Daley, who, by the way, had fought off attempts to close the airport while he ran the city.
Yeah. Yeah, there's like some great big little lake in it now. There's no way you could land anything there, not even a helicopter.
Yep. So that is the story of the time that Mayor Richard M. Daley decided to try and basically prevent anybody from using an airport anymore, basically grounding a bunch of innocent people and just stepping and pissing all over regulations because he could do it.
Yeah.
That's the way politics...
And clearly...
No.
Well, clearly that is the most heinous thing that we all remember that he did.
Yeah. Yeah. There's obviously some obvious sarcasm in there. The Daleys have basically a balls... ballrooms worth of skeletons in their closets. And that has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Okay. Maybe I should save another one for talking about the time when his dad completely screwed up the DNC National Convention in 68.
Oh my gosh. Right.
But that's another story. Anyway. With that out of the way, it is now time for the show proper. And as always, with the show proper, we have to talk about our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is none other than House Representative George Santos, who is now facing 13 counts from 3 different fraud schemes, because of course he is.
Yeah, this was a nice bit of news in the middle of the week as federal prosecutors announced that he had been charged with 7 counts of wire fraud, 3 counts of money laundering, 2 counts of making materially false statements to the House of Representatives, and 1 count of theft of public funds. If convicted, Santos faces up to 20 years in prison for the most serious charges.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the whole thing could get him as max, but This involves three different fraud schemes. There's the alleged fraudulent political contribution scheme.
Mm-hmm.
That lays out an alleged scheme in which Santos operated a limited liability company to defraud prospective supporters of his 2022 congressional campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They allege that he induced supporters to donate money to the unnamed company under the false pretense that the money would be used to support his candidacy.
Mm-hmm.
He then spent thousands of dollars of the solicited donations on personal expenses, including luxury designer clothes, credit card and car payments, and payments on personal debts. He allegedly directed an unidentified political consultant to tell supporters of his candidacy that mm-hmm. the company was a tax-exempt social welfare organization, that the contributions they made would be used in support of his congressional campaign, including to pay for television ads. Two donors transferred $25,000 apiece to the company's account, which Santos controlled, and that money was then transferred to Santos's personal bank accounts, according to yep. court filings. Prosecutors said the company was neither a 501c4 nor an independent expenditure committee, and Santos converted most of those funds to his own personal benefit.
Mm-hmm.
There's the alleged unemployment insurance fraud scheme that alleges Santos fraudulently collected enhanced unemployment benefits from New York State during the COVID-19 pandemic, though he was employed at the time as a regional director at a Florida-based investment firm, Harbor City Capital, earning about $120,000 a year. He received more than $24,000 in unemployment benefits, for which he was not eligible. And then the last one is alleged false statements and house disclosure reports. They say he engaged in efforts to mislead the House and the public about his financial condition in connection with two congressional campaigns, an unsuccessful 2020 House bid, and his 2022 race. During 2020 campaign, he filed two House disclosures in which he falsely certified that his only earned income was a salary totaling $55,000 during the relevant reporting period, and the only compensation received exceeding $5,000 came from an unspecified commission bonus. Mm. But the indictment states that Santos overstated his income, the income he received, and failed to disclose his salary from the Florida investment firm. And yeah, in September 2022, a second congressional campaign, they say he overstated his income and assets on a house disclosure form and falsely claimed he earned $750,000 from the DeVolder organization, a Florida-based entity, of which he was the sole beneficiary and received between $1 and $5 million in dividends from the firm. He also allegedly lied about having a checking account with between $100,000 and $250,000 and a savings account with between $1 and $5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors say those assertions were false. So,
yep. Yeah.
That's a lot there that adds to everything else we knew about him being a habitual liar
mm-hmm.
about things. And I think even in the middle of all this happening, he settled a thing with Brazil over stolen stuff he had there,
mm-hmm.
Where he admitted to it in exchange for not getting any sort of penalties, essentially. So I'm sure that won't add to the credibility of this stuff.
Mm.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had Kevin McCarthy being like, oh, I don't know about any of these things. We'll take a look at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah.
And now we get to an even bigger asshole. A Latino Nazi shot up an Allen, Texas mall, killing 8 people and wounding 7 others. And I think what really, obviously the most infuriating of this thing is, the dude went into a mall and murdered 8 people and wounded 7 others. Obviously, yeah. That's the most infuriating part of this story. There is, everything else is secondary. The secondary, of course, being the fact that there were so many assholes trying to disprove the fact that this guy was a Nazi. And one, it shows how horribly ignorant so many of them are about people in Central and South America. And two, I fucking hate the internet.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and a lot of people on Twitter being like, oh, this is a psyop.
They do that every time. A few hours ago, there was like a big like Patriot Front rally of like the dudes, you know, marching under their stupid fascist symbols, but their stupid khaki pants and blue shirts and masks and sunglasses. And everybody is like, it's a psyop. It's a psyop. They do that because they're a bunch of cowards, naturally. So,
yeah, But then a lot of people are like, there's no way he's MAGA, he's Latino. It's like, dude, you got to pay attention to your own movement.
Do you not remember who is the leader of the Proud?
Yeah.
A dude who is Afro-Cuban.
Yeah, and it's like, there are plenty of these figures in the GOP that are Latino and MAGA and all that. You know, Nick Fuentes, he doesn't have that last name because of just marriage.
No. And there have been several and are several fascist adjacent and Nazi and neo-Nazi groups that have popped up all over Central and South America ever since World War II. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, just because he's a Latino, you know, like not all Latinos are brown. I need to really point that out to people.
Yeah. But yeah, there's one tragic story of the victims. There was a family that went to the mall, two South Korean parents and their two children, and only the older kid made it out alive. He ended up losing both of his parents and his little brother in that whole thing. I believe they have a GoFundMe to help out, pay for, you know, expenses and all that, and probably savings and all that. But yeah, there was like a security guard that also passed away in this shooting, and as well as other people here. That is just sad to see that people just wanted to go to the mall on a Sunday. I think this was Saturday or Sunday. But yeah, Saturday.
Yeah.
That's like, they're just out at the mall, and unfortunately, several didn't make it home.
Yeah. And if you haven't noticed, pretty much all of these in the last few weeks, pretty much all of these mass shootings have happened specifically in Texas.
Yeah.
And speaking of Texas, there's also this one who got drunk and then got behind a car in Brownsville, Texas, and then he ran into people near a migrant shelter, ended up killing 8 people, injuring 10 others. He's now received reckless driving charges and about 18 others.
Yeah. People are like, oh, is this a race thing? And it's like, maybe, but not. It doesn't seem intentional. It seems like he lost control of this car, potentially on drugs.
Yeah.
That helped cause this, that killed 8 people and injured 10 others. That is a real tragedy here, but
yeah,
it's, and this is, it happened on like a Sunday morning. So he's been charged with reckless driving as well as 8 counts of manslaughter and 10 counts of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon. He found the SUV, ran a red light, lost control, flipped on its side, and struck a total of 18 individuals. They're not ruling out the possibility the crash was intentional. But they were still waiting on toxicology results. Like, the only stuff they've gotten when I checked the other day for updates on this was just potential for some drug stuff like cocaine, and marijuana, and something else in there. That was like, yeah, that's not great to have while you're driving. But yeah.
And let's see. And our last week, the guy who murdered Jordan Neely on a subway in New York has surrendered himself to the police and was charged with second-degree manslaughter.
Yeah, that's probably the right charge for it, because second-degree manslaughter means that what they did was sort of reckless, without maybe the premeditated intent to kill, but their actions led to the death of somebody. In a way, so it carries a maximum sentence of 15 years in prison. And yeah, let's see, he was released after posting $100,000 bail set by the judge. He's ordered to surrender his passport within 48 hours of arraignment and not to leave the state of New York. And his next court date is July 17th, so about 2 months away. On that, but yeah, this is another one where a lot of people have been writing a lot of shitty stuff about how, you know, he is a good Samaritan of, you know, dealing with this, you know, supposedly violent person that, from the accounts that are out there, wasn't really violent in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Was just loud and belligerent around the people. But this also at a New York subway train that was sitting there, wasn't moving or anything. So people were that bothered, they could have just left the train and go to one of the other cars if they needed to. But this guy, you know, decided to deal with it himself and ended up causing a lot of damage to his body and his neck and all that. And he ended up dying as a result of that. So he deserves whatever he can get out of this. So you're like, oh, he's a Marine, so he deserves leniency. And like, no.
No, no, he doesn't.
Those people deserve to be held to a higher standard.
Mm-hmm. That's kind of what the whole point of the Marines in the military is supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be among the best of the best of our Army. That's why they have their whole fucking branch to themselves.
Yeah.
But anyway, fortunately, it wasn't all terrible, because we did have one good thing happen this week. And that has to be our hero of the week. That's Miss E. Jean Carroll, who won her civil suit against Donald Trump on sexual abuse and defamation claims.
Yep. Yeah. I think the only thing she lost on was the rape claim.
Yeah.
They did not go for that, but did agree that he sexually abused her and then defamed her when he denied her story. She was awarded $5 million in total damages for both claims. So that is great news to finally have something pinned on him that is sticking, even though this is a civil trial. So there's no criminal charges or anything to this. You can't lay anything on that on him yet. That's what all the other stuff is for.
But because now there's other people wanting to watch civil suits against him. Other women.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and this had good timing happening the day before the CNN town hall, which prompted him to post things on Truth Social in all caps. I have absolutely no idea who this woman is. This verdict is a disgrace. A continuation of the greatest witch hunt of all time, and then later posted very unfair trial. So, you know, he's in good state of mind.
Oh, yeah. Our first story for the night is the advisors to the FDA, that's the Food and Drug Administration, have backed the very first over-the-counter birth control pill. Thank God.
Yeah. This has been a long time in the works.
A long time in the works. You're not kidding.
People have been working on this for at least like 20 years or so.
Yeah.
But yeah, in a unanimous vote, 17-0, a panel of advisors to the FDA recommended that the agency approve the first over-the-counter birth control pill. It would be sold by Perrigo under the brand name O-Pill. It's a so-called progestin-only pill that contains only a synthetic version of the hormone progesterone to prevent pregnancy. Most pills also contain estrogen. While the FDA typically follows the recommendations of advisory committees, it is not required to. But in comments after the vote, panel members explained their support for the prescription-free pill. Here's one saying, I feel the risk of unintended pregnancy is lower with this approach than any of the other available contraceptive approaches that women have access to without seeing a healthcare provider. That one's a professor of oncology, gynecology, and obstetrics at Johns Hopkins. She added she also thought that people would be able to understand if any health conditions they have would be incompatible with taking the pill. Another one said, I voted yes because the evidence demonstrates that the benefits clearly exceed the risks. The benefits include increased access to effective birth control, reduction in unintended pregnancies, and its risks and increased reproductive autonomy. O-Pill has the potential to have a huge public health impact.
Right.
And so, yeah, hopefully this ends up happening. And sort of lessens a lot of the barriers that people have to this stuff.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, this type of stuff should be just that easy to get. I know that the other, what most people call the pill, is one of those things that, do you have a prescription to get at?
Yep.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Well, I mean, okay, my info is 15 years out of date, but yeah, I always had to have one before that. And you can go to public health, you know, you can go to student health if you're a student, but you do have to have it prescribed to you. It's not over the counter.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that this gets approved and it's not stupid expensive.
Yeah.
Because this is the type of thing that could do a lot of good if it's put out there.
It really could.
Yeah. Okay. And next story. So as you all know, Tucker Carlson has been off the air for about 2 weeks after he got shit canned by Fox. Well, some of you probably might not know is that even though he fired by Fox, he's actually still under contract for them until I think it's 25. So technically until then, he can't really like go onto another network or do anything like that. But he's sure going to give it the old college try because he is restarting his show and he's going to put it on Twitter. Or at least that's the plan.
Yeah. But he posted a video. Nobody should watch it, but he said there aren't many platforms left that allow free speech. The last big one remaining in the world, the only one, is Twitter. Twitter has long served as the place where our national conversation incubates and develops. Twitter is not a partisan site. Everybody's allowed here, and we think that's a good thing. Which is weird to say, because I think just today, Twitter announced they were limiting certain accounts posting stuff in relation to the election coming up here for Erdogan
in Turkey. And it's pronounced Erdogan, but yeah, because the thing is, Erdogan is projected to lose and lose badly, but
yeah,
you know, the dude's essentially trying to make himself the dictator of the Turkish Republic, and well, obviously, Elon decided to cave and let that happen.
Yeah. So, let's see. Tucker and the network have yet to work out the terms under which he departs, which could complicate or thwart his plans.
Mm.
Carlson's lawyer warned Fox that it cannot enforce the non-compete provision in his contract that prohibits him from hosting a show outside of Fox until early 2025. Yeah, his attorney also has said that Fox has already breached the contract. Fox spokesperson said neither the network nor parent company Fox Corp are commenting on the letter.
Mm.
So yeah, people are thinking that Elon's paying for this switch over to Twitter. So who knows? But it seems like if you don't want to see any of this shit, go right now and block his account.
Yep.
Make sure it cannot pop up, and feel free to put up mutes for the names Tucker Carlson and variants of that.
I think I got blocked from his thing like months ago, so but yeah, I've already done it myself as well, so yeah. But anyway, next up, CNN decided that it would be a good former President Donald Trump a town hall, and just about nobody is happy.
Yeah. It just seems like he just lied throughout it and said all of his usual bullshit without much of a rebuke there.
Mm.
Spoke publicly about the trial against E. Jean Carroll, saying, "This woman, I don't know her. I never met her. I have no idea who she is." With that, also called her a whack job.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, claimed that she had a dog named Vagina. And that she called her African-American husband an ape.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of thing. And it's like, all right, that sure is a thing you could say.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the veracity of that is, but that's sure a thing that somebody said on cable TV. mm-hmm. that wants to be president.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where Trump is at for that. But yeah, he, you know, continued to go on about how the 2020 election was rigged, which it was not. Former Vice President Mike Pence had the authority to send the election back to the states on January 6th, which he did not. Mm-hmm. That Pence wasn't under threat that day, which he was. That Trump requested 10,000 troops to secure the Capitol on January 6th, which did not happen. Mm-hmm. That he had the right to take classified documents to his Florida home, which he didn't, and more items. You know, he did not criticize Russia or Vladimir Putin when talking about the Ukraine war. Didn't talk about abortion at all, at least in specifics. Said the debt ceiling should not be used as leverage to negotiate spending cuts while he was president. Mm-hmm. But Wednesday night said that that's different now because he's not president. Mm. So basically, you know, rules for thee, but not for me. Defended people who participated in the January 6th riot at the Capitol, saying he'll pardon many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Doubled down on his crude Access Hollywood comments about stars being able to do what they want with women and more. So, yeah.
Yeah.
He hit a lot of the hits of his whole thing.
Yeah. And as you can say, yeah, it did. See, a lot of people are very pissed at CNN. But next up, we got this little story out of Arizona. Arizona's House of Representatives is investigating a Democratic member over a Bible prank.
Yeah, this is a whole weird thing where State Rep Stephanie Stahl Hamilton was swiping Bibles from an end table and placing it under nearby cushions, like hiding them mm-hmm. as like a commentary on a separation of church and state. Mm-hmm. So I guess there's enough of these sitting around their state house that she was like, well, this is not great.
Mm-hmm.
The wrinkle is that she is a Presbyterian minister herself.
Yep.
And her own pastor described it as an ill-advised prank.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been kind of doing this, like hid one in a Bible, in a refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
you know, stuff like that. But, you know, the GOP who run it, you know, noticed this and have decided to go full scorched earth on her, I guess.
Yep. This is Arizona we're talking about.
Yeah, we and other members of the Arizona House who cherish our faith and hold the Bible in reverence do not see Representative Stahl Hamilton's disrespect of the scripture as playful in any regard. The three first-term Republican representatives accused her of disorderly conduct under House rules, theft, and creating a hostile work environment under state and federal laws, protecting workers from religious discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
To be clear, a health ethics inquiry can't find anyone criminally liable for anything. Mm-hmm. It's no court of law. The complaint could amount to nothing. It could also end in a House vote for punishment, as little as a censure, at most expulsion. Republican Rep. Joseph Chaplick, who chairs the Health Ethics Committee, is taking it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Something of this magnitude that's made national news, I think it's only wise to allow the person that has the claim held against him to come and speak about it. It's a woman, so shouldn't be saying him.
Yeah.
Due process, let them talk and understand what happened, and let's figure out if this is a valid or invalid claim against them.
Mm-hmm.
Which weirdly switches pronouns in the middle of that. So congratulations on being more progressive than most of your colleagues.
Yeah.
Able to use the pronoun them.
Yep.
When you're not sure.
Yeah. But so that happened. Because, again, it's not like they have other things they need to worry about. But.
Yeah.
And then we go to Florida, where lawmakers in Florida allow radioactive waste to be used to make roads.
Yep.
It's almost like a Simpsons episode.
Yeah. Phosphogypsum, a radioactive mm-hmm. waste material from the fertilizer industry,
mm-hmm.
Which is something that roads in Florida could soon include. Conservation groups are urging DeSantis to veto the bill because it's already passed the House and the Senate there. Saying it would hurt water quality and put road construction crews at higher risk of cancer.
Mm-hmm.
EPA also has a say in the matter. The agency regulates phosphogypsum and any plan to use it in Rhodes would require a review. Mm-hmm. So it may ultimately be null and void if they get the final say there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this bill would compel the Florida Transportation Department to study using fossil gypsum in paving projects, calling for demonstration projects using fossil gypsum in road construction aggregate material to determine its feasibility as a paving material. Mm-hmm. If it's approved, fossil gypsum would join pavement aggregates such as crushed stone, gravel, and sand. Recent years, the Federal Highway Administration says industrial byproducts and reclaimed materials have also been used as aggregates.
Mm-hmm.
But it sets a bill of April 1st, 2024 deadline, giving the transportation agency less than a year to complete its work and make a recommendation. Yeah, the Republican-dominated Florida legislature approved it by a wide margin. Mm. And yeah, if you're wondering what fossil gypsum is, in fertilizer, phosphorus is important for plants to grow strong roots and for crops to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. While phosphate rock is dissolved in a sulfuric acid to make phosphoric acid for fertilizer, and a few other uses, fossil gypsum is what's left over.
Mm.
The commonly used production process, which dates to the 1840s, it's not very efficient. For every ton of phosphoric acid produced, more than 5 tons of phosphate gypsum waste is generated.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, Florida's prominent role in making this stuff means the state also has massive waste sites called phosphate gypsum stacks or gyp stacks, which stacks can be very large, spanning up to 800 acres and about 200 feet in height. They've been linked to serious problems over the years due to sinkholes and other breaches. Yeah, it apparently contains appreciable quantities of uranium and its decay products such as radium-226.
Mm-hmm.
It's more radioactive than the original phosphate rock.
Mm.
So it doesn't sound great. It doesn't sound like it should be used in roads where, you know, roads are not known for their permanency.
Mm-hmm.
They chip away and erode and all that. So this seems like probably the companies that deal with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Probably paying people off to get them to take it off their hands.
Mm-hmm.
That's very much what it seems like. So there you go. Maybe another reason to stay away from Florida.
Yeah. And then we get to football shenanigans. Dan Snyder has officially agreed to sell the Washington Commanders, formerly the Washington Redskins, for $6 billion.
Yeah. It's a record for a North American professional sports franchise.
Yep.
Surpassing the $4.55 billion that Walmart heir Robert Walton paid for the Denver Broncos last year.
Mm-hmm.
Still pending approval of 3/4 of owners and other customary closing conditions, but it's a group led by Josh Harris that also includes Magic Johnson and some other notable people. But this guy is, let's see, a private equity investor.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a money person, basically. So, yeah, good to get Dan Snyder out of that position because he's just a very toxic, selfish person.
Mm-hmm.
Who's let a lot of awful shit happen in the organization with women being harassed and abused and that. So the faster they can get him out of there and potentially get him like a new stadium and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Because their stadium has had problems with sewage just spilling all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a great, analogy for what the franchise has been doing for the last 25 years. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now we get on to a couple of science stories here. First and foremost, researchers have discovered that hammerhead sharks actually hold their breath for deep, cold dives, which is very unusual.
Yeah, it's a thing that people just did not realize was a thing that they would do, because
mm-hmm.
Sharks tend to not do very deep dives outside of their habitat because they are cold-blooded,
mm-hmm.
Which, if you don't realize what that means that their body doesn't generate heat.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of like we do, where we keep at a pretty warm temperature so that even if we go out in the cold, we'll be okay for a while. That kind of thing. But sharks do not. They are ectothermic, or cold blood in their body temperatures essentially matches the waters they swim in. Mm-hmm. So to do deep dives, they must conserve body heat. And the best way that they do that is to tightly close their gill slits, which makes sense, but had not been really studied that much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a species called the scalloped hammerheads. They're known for swimming in coastal waters with warmer temperatures, but earlier studies showed they can also dive to more than 2,600 feet or 800 meters below the surface.
Mm.
At those frigid depths, the water temperature drops to as low as 41 degrees Fahrenheit. And yeah, for these sharks, the drop in temperature is a matter of life and death. Mm-hmm. Because the shark can't generate its own body heat, it begins to freeze the deeper it goes, as muscles, eyes, and brain become sluggish. If it gets too cold, it can't swim. Mm-hmm. If it stops swimming, water doesn't move across its gills. It can't breathe. It essentially drowns. Some other large fish have specialized anatomy that allows them to stay warmer at great depths, but scalloped hammerheads do not. And yeah, that's sort of like, how is a coastal, warm, tropical species able to go down into these depths and survive? And people figured out that, they just kind of close their gill slits, and that allows them to spend a few minutes down there hunting for squid and whatnot down there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they pitch themselves upwards at an 80-degree angle and shoot towards the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, their body temperature doesn't drop that much as they do this, because they're not spending that much time down there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's a neat thing.
Yeah. So yeah, that's absolutely fascinating. And then we got this story as well. NASA's James Webb Space Telescope has given them a closer look at a planet that is unusually shiny. They're even calling it like a mini Neptune.
Yeah. Which is a class of planet common in the galaxy, but something they don't really know too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this one is called GJ-1214b. It's too hot to harbor liquid water oceans, but water in vaporized form still could be a major part of its atmosphere.
Mm-hmm.
This year the planet is totally blanketed by some sort of haze or cloud layer.
Mm-hmm.
The atmosphere just remained totally hidden from us until this observation. If it's indeed water rich, the planet could have been a water world with large amounts of watery, icy material at the time of its formation, and have theories that maybe its orbit started further out from its sun, but it's moved closer to it. And I believe it has a pretty short orbit.
Mm-hmm.
I want to say it could essentially go through a year in 1.5 days.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that is what I read here, but it drops in temperature from about 535 to 326 degrees from day to night.
Mm-hmm.
Such a big shift is only possible in an atmosphere made up of heavier molecules such as water or methane, which appears similar when observed by MIRI,
mm-hmm.
Which is their mid-infrared instrument.
Mm-hmm.
And that means the atmosphere of GJ-1214b is not composed mainly of lighter hydrogen molecules, which is potentially important clue to the planet's history and formation, mm-hmm. and perhaps its watery start. And so, yeah, this is a cooler planet than they would have thought. It's because its unusually shiny atmosphere, which came to a surprise to the researchers,
mm-hmm.
reflects a large fraction of the light from its parent star rather than absorbing it and growing hotter.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, this is something that helps them, learn more from this type of planet, the mini Neptune, and sort of maybe how these sort of planets form, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So, yeah, some neat stuff. Yeah, it takes 1.6 Earth days to orbit around the star.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, and now we are firmly into the entertainment portion of the show. First story, as far as entertainment is concerned, is Sum 41 is officially disbanding after 27 years. Yeah, they've really been around that long.
Yeah, since about 96, so very much. I think it's said here that they started as like a, they were a cover band, a NoFX cover band in 96.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, only Derek Whibley remains from the original lineup, which has changed over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But they were big there for a while in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Mm.
Up there with Blink-182 and Green Day and that. But yeah, they announced that they were finishing up their last album, Heaven X Hell,
mm-hmm.
and going to be going on a final worldwide headlining tour to celebrate. Mm-hmm. They'll announce details on that stuff, but once that is done, they will be officially disbanding.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, kind of everybody going on their own way. So yeah, as I say mm-hmm. here for now, we look forward to seeing all of you scum fucks on the road mm-hmm. and are excited for what the future will bring for each of us.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
Yeah. So alrighty then. And yeah, then we got this story that's kind of been making the rounds. It's kind of a big deal. Disney is looking to merge both Disney Plus and Hulu into its own, quote, one app experience later this year. So,
yeah. This is a weird thing, because especially because they still don't own all of Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they have a clause in the contract with Comcast that I think at some point, either later this year or early next year,
mm-hmm.
They will have the opportunity to buy Comcast's 33% stake in Hulu
mm-hmm.
and sort of own it fully, but they have not decided yet on whether they will do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, starting in January 2024, Disney can require Comcast to sell its stake in Hulu,
mm-hmm.
and Comcast can force the sale as well, which in the current valuation of Hulu would... make that worth at least about $9.2 billion.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they said they are going to offer this option of an app that combines Disney Plus and Hulu.
Mm.
They also intend to raise the price of the regular Disney Plus tier without ads, which is currently $10.99
mm-hmm.
per month, in order to widen the delta relative to the ad-supported plan, which is $7.99 per month.
Mm-hmm.
In the U.S., the company increased the price of Disney Plus without ads last December by $3 when they introduced the ad tier at the lower price point. But yeah, they've been hemorrhaging subs. They lost about 4 million subs in the first 3 months of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
It's a relatively small bump, but they are, I believe, looking to invest less money into their production for the next year, which I think is also partially due to the writer's strike for that stuff. But yeah, they got a lot of stuff going on here. And, you know, like the name, the price, you know, whatever all this is going to do is still up in the air. But yeah, that's a lot of weird stuff. I guess Hulu gained 200,000 net new subscribers in the first quarter of the year. ESPN Plus increased by 400,000. But yeah, Disney Plus shed 4 million subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
Its second quarterly drop to stand at 157.8 million worldwide. So yeah.
Mm.
They're going to try the Max thing potentially.
Mm. Yeah.
Imagine if that doesn't go well, they'll just like, never mind.
Mm-hmm. And from Warner Brothers, we got this story. They have formally announced the sequel to the classic Beetlejuice. Beetlejuice 2 set to come out next year.
Yeah. They are aiming for September 6, 2024.
Mm-hmm.
Opening the same day as Marvel's Blade. That is currently as it's currently scheduled. But they've been announcing the cast here with Michael Keaton returning as Beetlejuice.
Mm-hmm.
Winona Ryder is Lydia Deetz. Jenna Ortega will join them as Lydia's daughter, as well as Justin Theroux in a yet-to-be-revealed role. They're planning to finish production here this past week, May 10th. So should be done at this point.
Mm.
But, yeah, that's... interesting. I don't know what the the turnout for this is, as far as like how well it's going to do. But I believe Beetlejuice is supposed to have a wife in this, which I don't know how that's going to work, but we'll see how well they do with this.
Yeah, I'll see. And then we got some trailers. First, we got an official trailer for The Walking Dead: Dead City.
Yeah, I read this was the fourth spinoff, and I could not realize what the others one. I know there's Fear the Walking Dead was the first one, which was set in L.A., and that's as far as I can get. I guess there's maybe one that stars, what his name is, but this one features Negan and Maggie being in New York to rescue Maggie's kidnapped son as they work together to navigate the streets of New York City, where conveniently there's a lot of dead people. I guess this premieres June 18th on AMC and AMC Plus. So, yeah, lots of Escape from New York vibes and some of the imagery here. As well as some human centipede. Looks like somebody has some weird mutated zombie. I don't know if it's like different ones merged together. I don't know. But they're going for some weird stuff.
Yeah. And then we also got a teaser trailer for a series called Poor Things.
Yeah, a movie here from director Yorgos Lanthimos, who you may not recognize for his name, but he did The Lobster and I think one other notable movie. But this one is very much like a spin on Frankenstein, as I believe Dr. Godwin Baxter, played by Willem Dafoe, brings Emma Stone's character here, Bella Baxter, to life and is sort of reintroducing her to society and all that as she is figuring out like what's going on in this world. And all the things she's learning. Mark Ruffalo plays a character in there. As well as, let's see, Rami Youssef and a few other characters. So, looks neat. That'll be out September 8th.
Yep. Let's see. And we also got an official trailer for Meg 2, The Trench.
Yeah, they've announced a sequel to the Meg, and this one seems to play into, there was an ecosystem under there, and they've gotten out, I guess. Including like dinosaurs and other weird creatures and such. And they have a great line like, that's the biggest Meg anyone's ever seen. It's like, this is the third one you've seen. What are you talking about? It's like a technicality. But yeah, very, very dumb action movie, it looks like, for all the stuff that's going on. And I guess I did not realize this until I saw like comments on the video here. This is based on a long running book series. Called The Meg, that started in like the late 90s. I'm guessing very influenced by like Jurassic Park and Jaws and that kind of stuff. And they have like the eighth book is coming out sometime soon, I guess. I don't know if the plot of this movie is based on any of those books or what, but it looks pretty interesting. Jason Statham is back to take on another Meg. So, and some of the other actors from the original as well. So, there you go.
And we also got an official trailer for Apple TV, The Crowded Room.
Yeah, this is an interesting, I think it's a series on Apple TV Plus starting June 9th. Features Tom Holland and Amanda Seyfried playing on a real thing that happened involving a shooting in New York City in 1979. Told through a series of interviews with the curious interrogator, talking to Danny Sullivan about his life story and things that have happened to him that he may not realize because of, I'm guessing, traumatic stuff that's happened to him. But I guess this show is also noteworthy because I guess Tom Holland had some mental health issues and alcohol abuse issues and has announced that he's been sober for the last like year and change as a result of kind of the weird shit that this movie put him, this show put him through mentally to really like reconsider his mental health and all that. At a certain point, like he has long, like moppish hair, and, like consider just shaving it all off at some point to like cleanse himself mentally. But because he was in the middle of the production, he decided against that, but decided to, you know, work on himself and all that. It's like, okay, that's interesting and glad that he's taking care of himself.
Yeah. And then, last but not least, we got an official trailer for Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, which, of course, is a biopic about Professor Oppenheimer and the Manhattan Project.
Yeah, J. Robert Oppenheimer and his wife, Kitty Oppenheimer. This very much looks like a Christopher Nolan movie.
Yep.
Very kind of slow and prodding and has Cillian Murphy back after working with him in the Batman movies. That kind of stuff. Robert Downey Jr.'s in this. Matt Damon's in this. Yeah, Emily Blunt. Florence Pugh. Benny Safdie. Michael Angiarano. Josh Hartnett plays Ernest Lawrence. Let's see, is Rami Malek, Kenneth Branagh working there? There's somebody that's Albert Einstein. I don't know if it's one of these, which one of these people it is. But yeah, big cast. This will be out July 21st. See how well it does. So, this very much looks like a whole lot about the development of the atom bomb.
Yep.
And sort of what that meant for, you know, the science and as well as just society. Because there's at one point where they're like, yeah, there's a chance that this could destroy the whole world when they're testing it. They had no clue sort of how it would go. But luckily, once they figured out, like, oh, this isn't going to destroy, but it's really going to fuck shit up. Whether it was a thing that really should exist.
And, I mean, he himself had that. I mean, his reaction to it and the story about it has kind of changed over time because he himself would sort of change his views on how the bomb, you know, affected him and the world. But famously, he was kind of haunted by it. But, yeah, so with that, I do believe we got ourselves a show, folks, that we do. So if you would like to get in contact with us, ask us a question or something you want us to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got a link for it in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. So, we're going to wind it down for tonight. If you liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share with your friends, family, casual acquaintances, mortal enemies, and every group that lies in between. And maybe your mom? We could make a good Mother's Day gift, I think. Don't you guys think we would make a good Mother's Day gift? Yeah, me neither. Yeah. But yeah, so we're going to go ahead and wind it up and join us again next week, where hopefully we will have some happier news to talk about, and we will see you then. Good night, everybody.